Support for this broadcast of Two Rivers 30 Minutes comes in part from a grant from Striffler's Family Funeral Homes.
From TubeCityOnline.com, this is Two Rivers 30 Minutes, a weekly series of interviews with people making news around the McKeesport area. Produced by Tube City Community Media Incorporated, a nonprofit corporation. I'm Jason Toger, the executive director. On this show, we talk one-on-one with elected officials, community leaders, and others who are trying to make a difference in the Monongahela area. And we also take your questions and comments on Facebook and Twitter at Tube City Online.
Andrew Carnegie, rather famously from Scotland, but of course made his fortune in iron and steel making in the United States, in Pittsburgh in particular, and specifically started his fortune in Braddock, Pennsylvania. So when it came time to start giving that money away and investing in libraries, needless to say, the first one he built was in Braddock, Pennsylvania. And a lot of people don't realize that the very first Carnegie Library of more than 2,000, I think, worldwide, was in Braddock. Big news, big doings at the Braddock Carnegie Library this year, which reopened after a $21 million renovation project. On the line with us right now is Vicki Vargo, Executive Director. Good morning, Vicki.
Good morning. How are you?
Good. So has the excitement kind of died down? Is the new library smell, does it still have that new library smell to it?
Always.
Okay.
Well, we are still finishing up on a few minor items, the vestibule, some rigging in the music hall, and some minor things in the book dive. So those are all expected to be totally finished by, say, end of October. But yeah, it will definitely be an adjustment for us to come into the building and not have workers here. We're certainly going to miss them. It's become like family for us.
Talk a little bit about what all amenities the library now has, because sure. Like Carnegie Library over in Homestead, which a lot of people are familiar with, the Carnegie Library in Homestead has fitness facilities and a swimming pool and a music hall. What are some of the other amenities that Carnegie put into this library in Braddock when it was built?
Well, he started off with the library itself because he gained his education by borrowing books from his neighbor, Colonel Anderson. So that was his gift to the community for people who wanted to pull themselves up. Beyond that, he either began realizing that free books do not pay for the utilities or things like that. He was a smart businessman. Mm-hmm. But also, one of the things that he promoted was that a person not only needs to be book educated, they also need to be well-rounded and have some culture in their life, have some physical activity, and above all else, cleanliness. So to that end, he installed a bathhouse in the building, a music hall, and a gymnasium. And all of those were not free. He did have the Carnegie Club, where workers from the steel mill would get a discount to join. But again, in those days, even if it was a quarter a week, that was quite hefty. But nonetheless, it was used widely throughout the 50s and 60s, and we're certainly glad that it was here. Unfortunately, this building closed in 1974.
I want to get to that. There have been some ups and downs and some twists and turns. If this were a movie, it would have a lot of plot twists before we got to the happy ending. Vicki Vargo is executive director of the Braddock Carnegie Library, which has rebranded itself as Carnegie One. Can you give us your website information for more information?
The website is carnegieone.org.
If people want to stop by and visit, how would they get there?
419 Library Street, and that's Braddock, Pennsylvania, 15104.
And it's only about a block off of Braddock Avenue. So if they come down Braddock Avenue, either from the George Westinghouse Bridge or from the Rankin Bridge, they get to the stoplight or stop sign, I guess, right now, and right there on Library Avenue. And what a good place what a coincidence that the library is on Library Avenue, isn't it? Vicki Vargo is our guest this morning. Take us back a little bit, because you mentioned something, that Carnegie was educated as a young man on the north side of Pittsburgh, I believe, what was then called Allegheny, and is now the north side. And he was going to a neighbor's library, but free libraries, free to the community libraries, were not really a thing yet, were they? We're talking the 1860s, 1870s era.
Right, yeah. And it was his feeling that books should be free for people who would like to improve themselves, to learn about different things. So this was quite an investment by him. And keep in mind, for most of the libraries he built, he paid for the construction, and then it was up to the municipality or the school district to raise the money to run that library. So it wasn't, you know, it was a gift, but he also ensured that somebody would take care of it.
And what year did that library open in Braddock?
1889, it was dedicated.
1889. Do you have any records from back then? What was the community's reaction? What was the response? Was there a big celebration when it opened?
Yes, there was a celebration. Mm-hmm. But keep in mind, it was only the library that opened at that time. 3 years later, by 1893, so it'd be 4 years later, it reopened with the amenities, the pool, the swimming pool, the gymnasium, the theater. Mm-hmm. So we have photographs of the 25th anniversary, and Carnegie attended that, and boy, they did the town up big. They had archways. Carnegie was on a platform. I mean, Library Street was filled with people, you know, climbing poles to see, you know, the great benefactor. And
and was it always considered a sort of a regional asset for Braddock and North Braddock and the townships and whatever? Or was it originally just for people who lived in the town of Braddock?
I think that's a good question. I don't really know. I know I grew up in North Braddock, so I remember using the library mm-hmm. as a child.
And what would, you know, was it always open to both men and women? Because I know there are some facilities where there was a man's entrance and a woman's entrance, or there was a children's entrance and a...
Particularly when it came to things like swimming, there were designated days for men and women. Because from what I understand, they swam in the nude. So, you know, it was...
I've heard that lasted in some areas right up until the 1950s and 60s, actually. Yeah, some YMCAs and so forth. Vicki Vargo is our guest. She is executive director of the Braddock Carnegie Library, which has rebranded itself as Carnegie One. It is the first Carnegie Library in the world, right there on Library Avenue, just off of Braddock Avenue in Braddock, recently reopened after a $21 million renovation. Just to sort of close the loop here, because I want to get into more about a little bit of the modern history, especially this massive renovation, which was really a regional community effort to bring this together. What would people have done in the 1880s, 1890s when they came to the library? You mentioned a bathhouse, for instance. Mm-hmm. I remember being told that a lot of houses in those days didn't have indoor plumbing. So if you worked at the mill, which was just almost across the street, I was told that you would stop at the library and get cleaned up before you came home.
Yes. Okay. And, you know, just as far as the 50s and 60s, I had an older friend who worked at the library, and part of her job was handing out towels. And she said they would charge a nickel for a towel.
Okay.
A neighbor of mine had said her brothers always used the bathhouse. Now, you know, maybe it was forbidden for women to use it, but that's something we'll have to explore.
And then I would assume in the colder weather, people came down and they played basketball or other activities in the gymnasium, and then kids did their studies.
Interesting fact. Yeah. We just learned that basketball was invented 3 years after our gymnasium was built. So the gymnasium was primarily built for gymnastics.
I was going to say for Indian clubs and medicine balls and the kind of things that they did in the late 1800s. Wow. So you predate, you're older than basketball.
That's a good way to put it. Yes.
I've been told a few times I was older than dirt. I've never been told I was older than basketball, but the Carnegie Library.
Better than older than dirt.
Yeah, or sliced bread for that matter. We're going to take a break. When we come back, I want you to pick up something that you mentioned, which is that the library closed for many years, and it's been a long, arduous process for by the community to get that library to where it is now as a jewel of the community. And then later on, I want to ask you about how people can get involved and how they can help and when they can come down and see the library, okay?
Yes, sure.
Vicki Vargo is executive director of the Braddock Carnegie Library, carnegie1.org. It recently reopened after a $21 million renovation, the very first Carnegie Library in the world. From the Tube City Center for Business and Innovation in downtown McKeesport, this is Two Rivers 30 Minutes on Radio 81 WEDO, 1550 and 101.1 WZUM, the Pittsburgh Jazz Channel, and Tube City Online Radio. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Support for this broadcast comes from the City of McKeesport Fair Housing Office. Fair housing is your right, and the Fair Housing Act prohibits discrimination in housing because of race, color, national origin, religion, sex, gender identity, sexual orientation, family status, or disability. That includes renting or buying a home, getting a mortgage, seeking housing assistance, or engaging in other housing-related activities. For more information about Fair Housing Act protections in the City of McKeesport, call 412-675-5020, extension 635.
Welcome back. We're talking to Vicki Vargo. She's executive director of the Carnegie Library in Braddock, which has been rebranded as Carnegie One. I made a boo-boo that is probably common, which is that it was the first Carnegie Library in the United States.
Yes.
But the very first one in the world is in Carnegie's hometown, which I believe is pronounced Dunfermline, Scotland?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But I'll bet it's not as nice as yours. Carnegie1.org. So what happened as Braddock entered the 1950s and 60s and people started to move out to the suburbs and the business district started to decline in Braddock, as it did in many towns up and down the valley? What happened to the Braddock Carnegie Library?
It was owned by the school district. It was owned by the Braddock School District at that point, who then went through a merger with North Braddock and Rankin to become the General Braddock School District. They subsequently closed the building. It was not a financially sound district, and this was surplus property to them. So it sat vacant from 1974 to roughly 79. And deteriorated, was vandalized. The elements took their toll on the building. So it became a hazard to the community, and the borough had planned to demolish it. But thankfully, the last librarian who worked here and lived just not even a block away formed a nonprofit and bought the building for a dollar. And that was David Solomon. And if it weren't for him, this building would be another empty lot in Braddock.
And that's not unheard of. There have been Carnegie libraries, as amazing as that sounds, that have been torn down. Duquesne, which, yes, my understanding, that building was very similar in appearance to your building.
Yeah.
That was torn down many years ago. So there was a time in the 1960s and 70s where these buildings were viewed as obsolete, as eyesores, as drains on the community. And as you mentioned, as it sat empty, it became a fire hazard.
Yeah.
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 When did it start to reopen to where people could begin to use it? You mentioned it was completely closed from 74 to 79.
Yes. And so Dave Solomon and his volunteers started seeking funds, and his first priority was to reopen the children's room, mm-hmm. and it opened one day a week. That was the early 80s. And then gradually, room by room, different areas would open up based on funding. So it was probably mid-80s before the building fully opened. And even then, even up until before we started renovations, only 50% of the building was usable. And that was either because it needed massive renovations or it did not have heat or air conditioning, so was just and it was not accessible.
And we're talking with Vicky Varga from the Brown at Carnegie Library, carnegie1.org, and we're going to let you know here in a little while how you can visit and also how you can help if you live in the area or if you're a former resident of the area. They just completed a $21 million renovation project. So when David Solomon and his volunteers reopened the library, it was still in pretty much the original 1880s, 1890s condition. So
Yes.
a lot of original features, which is good, but not a lot of modern amenities, which is not so good. I can remember going through the building circa 1992, 1993 when I was in college, and it was a gorgeous building, but you know, the music hall was abandoned for all intents and purposes, and the swimming pool was empty, and you could see the former grandeur of it. And it's been remarkable over the last 20 years or so as it's come back, and has come back to life. But as you said, 50% of it was not reopened. When did your board of directors and the volunteers decide, hey, we need a comprehensive program here to renovate?
Well, there was a very good friend of the library who was one of our funders, and we had asked her for funding for the music hall, and she came back to us and said, it's time that you quit doing things piecemeal. It's time to do a building master plan. Let's get the entire building done. And, you know, sounds easy. Sure, let's do that. And from that point,
I would have to disagree. It doesn't sound easy, actually, because if you've ever done a home
well,
renovation, you know how hard it is to renovate a house, let alone I don't know how many square feet your building is, but you know, you're in a 130-year-old building there.
Well, it was a challenge. And so, you know, at that point, we got funding for a building master plan. And then from there, it was just nonstop. Start raising money. You know, we picked an architect firm, and they then came up with a ballpark. Well, I guess it was a solid estimate at that time of $15 million. And then COVID hit, and the prices kept going up, and then we settled on 21, like 21.3. But yeah, it's one of those things where it just keeps going and going, and honestly, when it's done, I don't know if we'll actually. I think it'll take a while to soak in that it's actually finished.
I think it was Senator William Proxmire who said a million here and a million there, and pretty soon you're talking real money. $21 million is intimidating. How long were you out of the building entirely? Because I know for a while you sort of had temporary quarters at the Braddock's Battlefield Museum and down on Braddock Avenue in a storefront down there. How long were you out?
We were out for a little over 3 years,
Okay.
pretty close to four, I guess.
And I think that's the last time you were on this program to talk about that. You had two sort of angel investors that came through with big contributions. Tell us about how U.S. Steel and how the Pittsburgh Penguins helped the Braddock Library.
Well, at some point, you know, we needed to have campaign co-chairs, and it was suggested, well, you know, U.S. Steel is almost a no-brainer because if it weren't for the mill being there, this library wouldn't be here.
And if it
So,
wasn't for Carnegie being there, the mill wouldn't be there. Right. Yeah. Right.
exactly. So we have this intertwined history and relationship, so that it's almost like family. You know, we are from the same source. So, you know, we did ask, and then they had suggested that as co-chairs, we invite the Pittsburgh Penguins. And it's been a fun 4 years. You know, and it's been I mean, they're still in touch with us. They are still supporters of us. And you know, it's something that I think I was very fortunate to be a part of, and yeah, so they were instrumental in promoting our campaign to their circles of friends and investors, and just the support overall, coming to our meetings. You know, we had meetings every week just about.
I'm actually looking at some of the different funds that help make this possible. And again, $21 million would be a tremendous lift anywhere, but in a town the size of Braddock, is mm-hmm. particularly tall. You, state money, county, federal money from the National Endowment for the Humanities, the Department of Housing and Urban Development, the National Park Service, Department of the Interior. This is when people say, well, what are these federal agencies so important for? Well, they're working right here in your community, agencies like the National Endowment for the Humanities. But so many of the different charitable foundations around the Mon Valley, the Simon Foundation, I don't want to leave anybody out. I don't want to read them because I'm going to leave them out. Martha Mac Lewis, the Richard King Mellon Foundation, the Posner Foundation, the McGinley Foundation, the Grable Foundation, the Hillman Foundation, the Buncher Foundation, Fine Foundation, Eden Hall, Dollar Bank. So many. There's upwards of two dozen different contributors. And I'm assuming you raised a lot of money, too, through small contributions as well, huh?
Yes, we did. You know, between board, staff, individual contributions from the community.
Well, we have our second break to take. The time goes quickly. When we come back, I want to ask you about the current life of the library now that you've settled in a little bit. And also, you've got a book launch coming up. If you could tell us about that for the end of the program here.
Sure.
Vicki Vargo is our guest. She's executive director at the Braddock Carnegie Library. They're located right there on Library Avenue in Braddock. Very convenient. From the Tube City Center for Business and Innovation in downtown McKeesport, this is Two Rivers 30 Minutes.
Support for this broadcast comes from Striffler's Family Funeral Homes. Since 1866, Striffler's has provided compassionate professional memorial services for families at White Oak, McKeesport, Dravosburg, Portview, and the surrounding areas. Striffler's offers comprehensive pre-planning services and aftercare. And through its affiliated company Design Monuments, Striffler's also provides permanent markers and memorials crafted in stone, bronze, and other high-quality materials. Learn more at strifflers.com or call 412-678-6191.
Back for a final few minutes with Vicki Vargo from the Braddock Carnegie Library. They have rebranded as Carnegie One. They were the first Carnegie Library in the United States, the second one in the world after the one that Andrew Carnegie built in his hometown. You can find them online at carnegieone.org. What are your hours if people wanted to stop down and take a look around?
Right now, they are Monday and Friday, 9 to 5, Tuesday through Thursday, 11 to 7, and we hope shortly to be adding some Saturday hours.
And anyone who has an Access Pennsylvania library card can come down and check materials out, correct?
Yep.
So if your home library is McKeesport or Carnegie Library of Pittsburgh or any of the Access Pennsylvania libraries, you can stop down and see what they have to offer there at the Braddock Carnegie Library. Or if you don't have a library card, I'll bet Vicki and her staff would be happy to sign you up for one.
Yes, we can.
For absolutely zero. The Carnegie Free Library means it's free. So what is a day in the life of the library right now? What are some of the activities that have resumed at the library?
Well, in addition to just reopening library services where computers, books, DVDs are available, also starting up some programming, you know, getting back in the swing of things and just getting the word out. We're here, we're back, we're having programs, we're having services. But there is no typical day in the life because every day brings something new. So you never know who will walk through that door. And, you know, most people think it's boring to work in a library, but it couldn't be further from the truth. It's always an interesting day here. And always something going on, which can I plug our...
Yes, please. You've got a book launch coming up. Yeah.
Yes, we commissioned a book about the history of the library from its inception to how we got to the $21.3 million renovations. And geez, you know, Bob Ketchum did the research and the writing of the book, got a lot of interesting photographs, taught us things that we didn't even know about the library. So we will have a book launch fundraiser on September 25th, and that is from 6 until 8 p.m.
Okay.
And or no, 6 until 9. So Bob will be there to talk about the process of writing the book, take some questions and answers, and he will also autograph. It's a $20 admission to the event, and then the book will be for sale there.
So you'll be able to buy a copy of the book as well. If people can't make it to the event on the evening of September 25th. You will have copies, I'm sure, available afterwards for people to stop in and buy.
Yeah, he will also pre-sign some books, so we will have those available.
Something that we've talked about with other librarians and other libraries over the years, Vicki Vargo is executive director of the Carnegie Library in Braddock, carnegieone.org, is that libraries are more than just books. They have books, but they've also got music. They've got, in some cases, art that you can borrow. Your library used to loan, I believe, tools, did it not? And some other household items?
We started off, and, you know, first of all, we never say more than books because books are so very important.
We can just look behind me at all the books on the bookshelf here. So, yes, we can never say that.
But yes, we in 2013, we were part of the Carnegie International, and the project that took us there was an art lending collection. So we started out with that you could borrow a piece of artwork for 2 weeks with your library card. And it was very successful, which then people started asking, what about tables? What about chairs, tents, coolers, things like that? You know, you name it. So as different people started asking for things based on the demand, we started to build the collection to probably our biggest circulating item is tables and chairs.
That's amazing. That is absolutely amazing. You used to, at one time, too, also have a printmaking studio and a pottery studio, I believe, in the library. Has that returned? Okay.
Yes. Yep.
The swimming pool did not return, and I'll bet a lot of people ask about that. What is the swimming pool area?
Come and see. It's called the Book Dive now.
Okay.
And you have to come and see. We are happy to take people on tours. We just ask that you call ahead and schedule a time.
Okay.
Also, I just wanted to say briefly that this September is Love Your Library Month.
Uh-huh.
So show all your libraries some loving, and any donations made up to $500 this month are partially matched by the Jack Bunter Foundation.
Do people who used to live in the area, do they come back and visit? And I'm wondering if what their reaction is when they see the library again.
I think it's been mixed. I had somebody who grew up in Braddock, went to Braddock High School. He was in for a reunion. And I don't think he was overjoyed with the pool, but
pools are expensive. They are very, anyone who's had a pool at home knows how expensive your home pool is, let alone a large institutional one.
And this one was in such bad damage that it would have been far too expensive to repair it and operate it.
Yeah.
But I think most people are very pleased with what's there, and it's a space that's rentable, usable, and it's just very unique.
How can people help if they either live in the area? I know obviously donations help. Libraries live on donations, especially rather than books. Most libraries would rather just have the money value of it. But do you take volunteers? Do you need volunteers? Do you need docents?
Yes. Okay. Absolutely. So if you go online or if you call and you have a particular area you're interested in, we do have a sign-up sheet available in multiple places throughout the library. So if you come for a visit, we'll be happy to have you fill one out and help with programming, help with fundraising. Sure.
So September 25th is the launch party for the book about the history of the Carnegie Library of Braddock, and you can get a signed copy of that, I'm assuming. Go to carnegieone.org. They can get more information.
Yes.
And then Monday through Friday, the library is open. The hours vary, so check the website or give them a call before you stop down. Vicki Vargo, congratulations, and let's not make it another 3 years before we have you on the show to let people know what's going on at the first Carnegie Library in the United States.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
And thank you all for listening this week to Two Rivers 30 Minutes, broadcasting from the Tube City Center for Business and Innovation in downtown McKeesport. So long for now.
You've been listening to Two Rivers 30 Minutes, copyright Tube City Community Media Incorporated. Opinions expressed on this program are not those of Tube City Community Media Incorporated. Listener support makes this program possible. If you'd like to make a tax-deductible contribution, please visit our website at tubecityonline.com and click on the donate link.
You can also get a free subscription to this program and other podcasts at our website using Apple's iTunes or Stitcher.com. If you've got a question or comment, we hope you'll write to us. Our address is Tube City Community Media Incorporated, P.O. Box 94, McKeesport, PA, 15134. You can email us at TubeCityTiger@gmail.com or call us at area code 412-614-9659. And you can find us on Facebook and Twitter at Tube City Online.